Now, listen to this CV. Brian Gainsler is Professor of Physics at the University of Sydney. He's a former Young Australian of the Year. He's an astronomer. He's Director of the Centre of Excellence for All Sky Astrophysics. That sounds cosmic, doesn't it? And his first popular science book, Extreme Cosmos, came out last year. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. He's done so much. Brian Gainsler, as you can hear, is an overachiever. Now, he also loves science fiction, which I guess makes sense for an astronomer, and he likes reviewing books. He joins me from our Sydney studios to tell us about two novels that he's been reading lately. One is called Blue Remembered Earth. That's by Alistair Reynolds. And Stephen King's book, 11-22-63. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Michael.
Were you listening to that last segment in your headphones?
I was.
It was exhausting, wasn't it? we'll try and calm down. Tell me about sci-fi. Is it an escape for you?
It is. I like to. If I were a classical violinist playing in a symphony orchestra, I like to think that when I came home at night, I wouldn't put on classical music, but I'd listen to Lady Gaga or Kylie Minogue. And in the same way, when I'm finished doing all my calculations about galaxies and stars and nebulae, I come home at night and I let my hair down and say, let's put aside those pesky rules of physics like nothing can travel faster than light. And where could imagination take us if we went towards the possibilities that physics prevents us from pursuing.
I see. You buckle up and imagine what it would be like to go even faster than light.
Exactly. There are many books, good novels, that stick to the rules of physics, but you know, as they say in Star Trek, it would have been a not riveting television if it took 200 years to travel to the nearest star rather than 5 minutes. So you cut corners because science fiction, like all fiction, is about a human story, so, and the laws of physics don't always follow.
See, you should have been a stand-up comedian. Deep down, you're a rule breaker.
Yes, a rebel against the laws of the universe.
That's right. Here's the man. Now, let's talk about Alistair Reynolds. Who's he?
So Alistair Reynolds is or was an astronomer. He has a PhD in astrophysics and worked for several years working and publishing in the field of astronomy, but discovered that he had far more talent and far more interest in writing fiction. And so a number of years ago, gave up his career in astronomy and switched over to full-time writing, and has written a string of, dare I say, extraordinary novels that have really reshaped science fiction and help put British science fiction squarely at the lead of what's happening at the moment. But his books have always just been extraordinary, and all you really need to know is it's by Alistair Reynolds to make it a must-read.
But Blue Remembered Earth doesn't cut it, in your view?
Unfortunately, no. I bought this book unseen, didn't bother reading any reviews or blurbs, just bought it and started reading it, dropped the book I was reading to get into this, because anything by this guy is gold. And a few weeks later, 500 pages later, I was just sort of stunned. I didn't even feel like it was by Alistair Reynolds. I couldn't hear his voice and his characteristic style in there. I'm not sure what went wrong. And to be honest, I'm a bit disappointed to realize that this is actually only book one of a trilogy, and there's two more books of this stuff to come.
Two more of this stuff to come, yes. That's a terrible review. Oh, no, two more books of this stuff to come. In fact, that's all you need to write, really, to really cut this book down. I mean, it's got a great premise. Africa is now a superpower.
Yeah, so this book is set about 200 years in the future, and global warming and food shortages have taken their toll. And the traditional powers of Europe, Asia, the US, they're barely even mentioned in the book. Certainly, there's no parts of the book that take place in these locations. And all the world's economic and intellectual and creative focus is now in Africa. And it's African families and African companies that really run the world's economy. So that immediately was interesting. And I was interested to see what take he would have on that. I was disappointed to find out at the end of the book, when he sort of explains in his afterword why he wrote the book the way he did, he admits he's never even been to Africa, which I thought was a bit odd, to spend so much time describing in detail various aspects of what Africa is like and how it will look in the future, to confess that he doesn't actually have any first-hand experience.
Society is completely governed by something called the mechanism. What's the mechanism?
So the world is now very peaceful. Crime is non-existent, and it's explained that this is because of the mechanism, with a capital M. Everyone has these small chips are implanted in their brains that monitor your mood and your actions and your thinking. And as soon as you start to do anything illegal, violent, inappropriate, the mechanism cuts in and sort of administers a sort of an electric shock that causes you to sort of collapse to the ground in pain and prevents you from doing what you're about to do. And what this means is obviously society is very stable and peaceful, and the idea of anyone being a victim of a crime is unheard of. But there's a suggestion in the book that this is somehow making society a little bit stagnant and boring. And while it never quite goes there, you've got to wonder if maybe volumes 2 and 3 are perhaps about trying to free ourselves from this yoke of the mechanism.
So everyone's got a little kind of taser in their head.
Pretty much. And the bits where the book did start to rise a little bit above the norm is when the main character, Jeffrey, takes a swing at his cousin. His cousin's just annoying and is driving him crazy, and he decides to punch him, even though he knows that you can't do that. And you know, even as he does it, he knows the mechanism's going to taser him, as you said. But what happens afterwards, I thought it would just leave it at that, that he was sort of wrapped across the knuckles saying, don't do that. But even thinking of hitting someone is quite a grievous crime, and after this he essentially becomes a fugitive. He's on the run because they're going to incarcerate him and potentially reprogram him or wipe his brain just because he took one swing at another person. So even the most trivial act of violence is just completely intolerable in this future society. Mm.
Now, Brian, you didn't like this, but on the Goodreads website, it was given an average of 3.5 stars, which is okay.
Firstly, I'd say that's not okay by my standards. I like to have books that are above 4 out of 5. 3.5 suggests there's a few people who like it, but a few who don't. But I did look at the reviews for this book online after I read my own review. Normally, I'd read the reviews before I bought it, but because it was Alistair Reynolds, I thought I don't need to worry about that. And I wrote a less than favourable review, but was surprised that a lot of people did read it. And I just can't explain that. I think a lot of them were sort of convinced that this is all setting up some grand master plan that's going to be revealed in the second and third books, and we're happy with this being purely set up. Now, maybe this is set up, and maybe book 2 is going to be extraordinary, but in any trilogy, especially when the second and third books are going to be years away, you'd like to think the author's going to leave a few things hanging, but is going to at least offer you enough that you can enjoy the book in its
own. Well, Brian,
life.
One thing I've learned in this job is there are a lot of people, I don't know about a lot of people, but there are plenty of people who seem to have time to read very, very big books.
Yeah, and I'm so torn on that. If the book's really good, I'm happy. It can be as long as it takes. But I do not want to invest 500 pages and many weeks of my precious leisure time into reading something that didn't really give me any insight or any reveals or any thoughts about, oh, that's quite clever. Mm. And I felt that the whole book was either set up or, even worse, it just wasn't going anywhere at all.
We're looking at some science fiction with Brian Gensler. Brian, you've had a very different response to Stephen King's novel about the JFK assassination. It's called 11-22-63, which is the American way of writing the date 22nd of November 1963.
Yeah, so this book was really extraordinary. It's not just the best book I've read in the last year, but it's one of those books where, you know, every time or every 5 years or so you come across a real milestone in literature, and for me this book was the best book I've read in many years. I probably grew out of reading Stephen King when I was about 15. I like a lot of boys my age, read all of his sort of horror stuff for that sort of thrill of scaring yourself silly, but sort of grew out of that and the idea that there were sort of monsters under the bed. And I came back to this one on the assurance from several people that it was in no way or shape a horror book, and it really was something quite different and quite extraordinary.
I didn't know that he wrote science fiction.
Oh, I didn't either, but apparently he has dabbled at the edges and he has written a few interesting science fiction books. And even though you're assured this wasn't horror, you kept waiting for it to sort of descend into horror. It certainly had some bits that were quite sort of nail-biting moments and frightening moments, but they weren't supernatural horror, some you know, evil alien or spirit. It was more just traditional sort of, it was a thriller, it was romance, but it was also fundamentally a story that is all about sci-fi, a what-if story. If you can let go of the rules of physics, what can you say about people and about stories and about interactions?
So what's the broad premise of the book?
Well, it's a very simple premise, and that's that there's this school teacher in 2011 in the US, and he stumbles across a way to go back to 1959. He decides that the best way to make use of going back to 1959 is to stop JFK being assassinated. He's motivated by the millions of people that died in Vietnam and various other political things that happened after JFK. He convinces himself that if JFK had survived and served 2 terms, that none of this would have happened and millions of people wouldn't have had to suffer. So the right thing to do is to stop Lee Harvey Oswald and to stop that bullet going into JFK on that date in November 63.
Well, that's interesting because in lots of science fiction, the central trope is that when you go back to the past, you mustn't change things because you don't know how that will all unravel.
That's right. And so Stephen King plays with that and sort of makes fun of that approach the phrase he uses over and over, the main character uses over and over again in the book, because the book's told in the first person, is that the past is obdurate. And so the slight twist on this is that the past doesn't like being changed. And if you try and change the past, it tries to stop you. So if you're trying to, there's a scene early in the book where he's trying to stop a girl from being killed in a hunting accident. And, his car breaks down and then he tries to run to where it's going to happen and a tree falls down. But if you try hard enough, you can change the past. It's just that it pushes back harder and harder. So the frenetic scene toward the end where he's racing towards Dealey Plaza trying to stop Oswald, there's just this comical succession of things keep happening to him to try and stop him. But by this point in the book, he's expecting this. And so he's prepared for every eventuality to try and change the past, even though the past is desperately trying to stay on its ordained course.
So that's a big thumbs up for that one.
Yeah, look, it's. I think fundamentally it's a romance, and I'm certainly not the type that reads romance novels, but it's a romance between two people, and it's also Stephen King's romance with the 1950s. He seems to really love that period, or many of his books are set there, and it just paints this, not just a glossy, everything was perfect view of that time, but it's really a triumph of what was special about that time, perhaps what we've lost, but in this traditional sci-fi time travel setting.
Brian, we'll have to leave it there. I'll let you get back to the real physics.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Good on you. Brian Gainsler, he's Professor of Physics at the University of Sydney. And 112263 by Stephen King is from Hodder, and Alistair Reynolds' Blue Remembered Earth is published by Gollancz.